Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Did you know that as more people listen to WNYC on the internet, our bandwidth expenses go up? Please do your part to support WNYC's online services. Click the ePledge button to make your gift now. And thanks.
From WNYC New York Public Radio, this is The Brian Lehrer Show. I'm Brian Lehrer. This is just one segment of our show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 1-800-NOW-OPEN or open.com.
Before we get to the Subway Chronicles, a couple of things. On tomorrow's show, we will be joined by radio producer Jay Allison. He's the one who revived the Edward R. Murrow series, This I Believe, for NPR. Have you been hearing that? You've heard some of these essays by celebrities from Eve Ensler to Bill Gates to Colin Powell to Penn Jillette, and some by NPR listeners. Well, there's a new collection of the essays, This I Believe, and we will play excerpts from some of them, some of the audio, and we also will open it up for you. What is your credo? Email us. Email us now with your brief statement of belief, and we will pick out a few and maybe call you back to read them on the air. So send your emails with your short statements of your This I Believe to Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org with the subject heading, This I Believe. Send it before 8 o'clock tomorrow morning and include your phone number, and maybe we'll put you on tomorrow's show. Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org, the email address. So we're going to hear stories of the funny, the touching, and the just plain weird from the New York City Underground. We'll get to them in 15 seconds after I thank you wholeheartedly for a rousing showing of support to begin our fall membership drive. We appreciate that you appreciate 30 issues in 30 days, and we'll keep it up. Now, just a quick reminder that we hope that sometime this hour, if you have not yet done so, you will cast your vote by keeping WNYC alive and well with a once-a-year contribution. It's 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692. Or pledge online at WNYC.org. And thanks a lot, everybody. So there's this fun new book called The Subway Chronicles, Scenes from Life in New York, published by Plume. Contributors include Jonathan Latham, Francine Prose, Stan Fischler, Lawrence Block, and many others. And we thought it would be fun to spend some time this hour hearing from a few of the contributors with their subway stories and then taking some of yours on the phones. So don't call yet. I'll let you know when we're ready. But the deal is, we will want your one-minute stories of things that happened to you or that you saw on the subways. They can be funny or touching or just plain weird, but they should be good stories, and we'll ask you to give us the 60-second version in a little while. But with me right now are Jacqueline Kangro, editor of the Subway Chronicles, and our first contributor, Daniels Parsalidi, a writer from Queens whose essay is called Porno Man and I versus the Feminist Avenger and Displaced Anger Man. So, Jackie, Dan, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Jackie, this book, I gather, was inspired over Thanksgiving dinner?
It was. It was a bunch of friends just trying to outdo each other in their best subway stories. And I thought, if we had that many stories, everyone who's ever ridden the subway has to have a story, right?
Yeah. And you write in the introduction that you do most of your writing on the subway. Really?
I do. What better place to be inspired and to find good characters?
Isn't it distracting?
That's what I love about it. I can jot down notes about every interesting and delectable tidbit that I see and then recreate it in my fictional life.
Now, Dan, what a story you have. Porno Man and I versus the Feminist Agenda. The Feminist... See, I'm doing Sean Hannity.
Fair enough.
The Feminist Avenger and Displaced Anger Man. Start at the beginning. When was this, and what line were you on?
This was in about 2001, and I was on the NW line. It was a short commute that time. It was about three stops from my house to the apartment of my girlfriend's.
You live in Queens, so was it up in Astoria?
Exactly. It was in Astoria. I'm sorry, yeah. And so... So yeah, it was just kind of a little three-stop subway jaunt, and I got on the train and sat down next to, you know, two not unattractive kind of hipster girls, and started thinking a little bit about gentrification in Queens and in Astoria, and all of a sudden I'm presented with this picture of a naked woman being held up by this apparently homeless man on the other side of the train, and so I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, you know, I guess the gentrification is not going too far. We, you know, still have some local interest, local color going on here. And the girls looked and kind of shied away. And everyone just thought it was kind of a bizarre occurrence. And I made the mistake of laughing kind of loudly. I was a little surprised, and I laughed. And this seemed to really encourage this gentleman, who I call Porno Man, to encourage him to show off a little bit more of his porn. So he flips through some more and gives us all a couple more pictures, and everyone kind of tries to look away. And, you know, quick commute. We finally get to the end of the line, and another person walks in the other side of the train, and this was another of the homeless people. And I say homeless, you know, I'm using this term in a broad sense. Could be living in a shelter, could be living somewhere else.
What you know about them is that they come on the subway, you recognize them, and they regularly ask for money.
This is correct, yes. Money or food, exactly. This is a woman, and she comes on, and Porno Man decides to, you know, give her a full dose of whatever he's got to offer in his magazine, and he holds it up, and she immediately becomes furious and starts yelling, says, you know, have you no respect for women? What's the matter with you? And, you know, fair enough point. So she runs over to him, though. It's yelling's not really enough, and he doesn't seem content with, you know, putting it away. He wants to keep showing off the magazine. So she runs over to him and starts engaging this kind of tug of war with him over the magazine. And he doesn't want to give it up. She wants to take it away. She's screaming. And all of a sudden, she starts slapping him and whacking him in the head. And he puts his head down on his chest. He's pulling. And I'm watching this whole thing going on. And everyone on the train is watching this. And it's uncomfortable. But, you know, we're kind of saying, well, do I intervene? Is this a serious situation or just a silly situation?
Plus, you must have the guilt of thinking, God, you unwittingly egged this guy on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I'm thinking, wow, I somehow, you know, provided him with the motivation to take his act a little further. And so I'm feeling a little bit guilty about this. And the two are tussling. And from kind of my left-hand side enters this other gentleman who I assume was also homeless, you know, another guy who asked for money, dressed a little bit better than your average, you know, person soliciting you for money. Leather jacket, kind of beat up with a big flashlight in his pocket. And I wondered to myself, I think, well, maybe he's just going to break up this, you know, maybe he knows the Porno Man you know, maybe he wants to break up the fight. But, you know, Porno Man wasn't so lucky. This guy, who I call Displaced Anger Man, starts to take the feminist avenger side, and he says, what's the matter with you? Don't you have any respect for women? And he starts screaming at the guy. The feminist avenger, let's go with a magazine. Porno Man kind of sits up. And then Displaced Anger Man grabs Porno Man by the head and just slams his head into the train aluminum. Is it once? He does it again, and he kind of grinds it, you know, grinds it under his palm, and you know, this has suddenly become a real nasty situation. It went from a situation that was kind of
mildly amusing,
yeah, or very amusing.
A little bit gross, but mildly amusing.
Exactly. You know, is this an assault? Is this someone getting straight up beaten in front of me on the train?
And how many times have people in New York, subway or otherwise, seen something like this and thought, oh my God, should I intervene? When do I take a physical risk?
Exactly. And that was, you know, the question going through my mind was, you know, what needs to happen here in order for me to act on this particular situation? Does he need to stab him? Does he need to hit him, you know, five more times? And the whole time I'm wondering, you know, I should really help, but does no one else think the same thing I'm thinking? Doesn't someone else in this train also want to help this guy? But, you know, the train pulls in the station and the doors open and literally everyone else runs off the train, except for me and these three coilers. And so Porto Man's looking pretty beat up. And I finally, you know, I'm going over this over and over in my head. What do I do? When do I act? What should I be doing? And I kind of hit this, as I like to call it, a Wittgensteinian moment of bedrock, where all the explanations that I could possibly give for acting have given way.
For not acting.
For not acting have given way. But also all the reasons that I can give myself for acting, they seem to be present in my mind, but still I don't find myself moving. And, you know, finally something happened, and I just got up, and I ran in between the two, and I said, you really have to stop hitting this guy. You know, this is just...
And did he?
He did. Yeah, he did. And it was fairly nerve-wracking. He was a little bit shorter than I had expected him to be, but it was one of these moments where I kind of had no idea if all of a sudden, you know, I was going to wind up with a razor blade in my stomach or
right.
something.
But isn't it funny to think about the power of words? Because here's this guy just wailing on this other guy, and you're sitting there in stark fear, and obviously everybody else is because they ran off the train.
Yes.
And you go, you have to stop this. And he goes, okay. And he actually stops.
He did, yeah. And he tried to, it was interesting because he tried to argue with me just really quickly about, he said, what if this was your mother? And, you know, pointing to the porno magazine, and I was really shocked. I couldn't have thought of anything that he was going to say that would you know, veer in that direction at all, and so I said, well, you know, even if it is, you can't be beating this man because, you know, if that were my mother, so can we please, you got to stop, just please get off the train.
Daniels Parsalidi, a writer from Queens, whose essay is called Porno Man and I Versus the Feminist Avenger and Displaced Anger Man, in the book The Subway Chronicles, Scenes from Life in New York. The Subway Chronicles, Scenes from Life in New York, published by Plume. Also with us, the editor, Jacqueline Kangro. And now we will begin to invite your one-minute stories of things that happened to you or that you saw on the subways. They can be funny or touching or stark raving weird like the one we just heard, but they should all be good stories, and we will ask you to give us the 1 minute version, the 60-second version when we take some of your calls in a few minutes. You can start getting in line at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Dan, was there a moral to your story?
I can't say there was exactly a moral to my story. It could have, I guess, if there was one, been a kind of a moral of particulars. Because, you know, after this thing happened, I was sitting there and wondering, you know, why did no one else help Porno Man? And my conclusion was kind of that, well, A, you know, you can be afraid of violence, which is fair enough. And B, it's really easy to ignore the homeless or the poor. And, you know, if you concluded that you should help this guy and prevent him from being physically injured, do you now feel like you have to take responsibility for the rest of his well-being, for his financial well-being, for his physical well-being, for his mental well-being?
So, Jackie, where does his story, Porno Man and I Versus the Feminist Avenger and Displaced Anger Man, fit into the larger scheme of this book?
Well, his essay was one of the essays that we took off of the website, subwaychronicles.com. Dan's essay came to me through there, and I knew that if I was going to do a print version of the website, I had to include his essay in
this
book.
So you've got a website on which you've been collecting subway stories.
Exactly, since March 2002.
Uh-huh.
So if the listeners, you know, can't get to share their stories today, they can certainly submit them to the website, because we're still publishing there as well.
Okay.
But
we'll continue in a few minutes. And here, just by way of teasing the next segment, here's an email that says, one time I was on the F train on my way home. I was reading Paul Auster's The Brooklyn Follies. I looked up and saw that Paul Auster was sitting right next to me on his way to Park Slope, where he lives, only in New York. So we'll have another contributor, Amy Holman, and start to take your calls, your one-minute subway stories, the funny, the touching, the just plain weird. Dan, great story, and well told, by the way. Thanks a lot. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Before we get back to the Subway Chronicles, on tomorrow's show, we will be joined by radio producer Jay Allison from NPR, who revived the Edward R. Murrow series, This I Believe. You've probably heard some of these essays by celebrities like Eve Ensler and Bill Gates and Colin Powell and Penn Jillette and some by NPR listeners. Well, there's a new collection of the essays, and we will play excerpts from some of them, some of the audio, and we will want to hear yours tomorrow. What is your credo? What is the this that you believe? And we're asking you to email us with your brief statements of belief, and we will pick out a few, and maybe you can read yours on the air. So include your phone number when you email brianlehrershow@wnyc.org with the subject heading, This I Believe, before 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, and maybe you can be on the air to read it, brianlehrershow@wnyc.org for tomorrow's show. We continue now with the Subway Chronicles, stories of the funny, the touching, and the just plain weird from the New York City Underground, from a really fun new book called The Subway Chronicles, Scenes from Life in New York, published by Plume. Contributors include Jonathan Latham, Francine Prose, Stan Fischler, Lawrence Block, and others, and we thought it would be fun to spend some time this hour hearing from a few of the contributors with their subway stories and take some of yours on the phone. So our lines are full. We will get to your calls in just a minute with your one-minute subway stories. Back with us now, Jacqueline Kangro, editor of the Subway Chronicles, and another contributor, Amy Holman, author of An Insider's Guide to Creative Writing Program. She teaches creative writing at, is it the New School, Amy?
The New School, and yes. Well, not creative writing. I teach how to get published.
Okay. That's always, that's a often yes. An act of creative writing in its own
yes,
right.
Yes, it
right?
is.
And her several short essays in this book are published under the title Cups. How'd you get a Cups theme going?
Well, I really didn't want to limit myself to one experience, and so I tried to think about what I could do to connect the experiences, and there were a few experiences that involved cups, like a coffee cup, a prefab urinal has a cup, and a cup with a slogan that was adapted.
Want to tell us one of your cup stories?
Well, the one that I feel the most ashamed about is the one that opens the essay, and I am deeply sorry to the individual that started it. But I was on the subway, and I did what people do, and which is against the rules, and I brought a coffee cup onto the a paper coffee cup. with a little sipping square, and I thought, well, I used to walk my dog who was a golden retriever, a very excited golden retriever, and I would be able to have him collapse into craziness on the street while drinking a cup of coffee. So I figured going on the subway wouldn't be a problem. But the problem was that, and there was this this beautiful stylized couple that came on, this man and this woman, and they were dressed in beautiful clothes. The man had this suit that the fabric was really like a knight in a forest rather than a piece of fabric. Beautiful. So they were getting off the subway at a station, and there was an old guy who was sitting down who suddenly realized he had to get off, and he barreled into me. And so my coffee went onto the back of the jacket of the man who was exiting the train.
Oh, this impeccably dressed.
Impeccable.
Part of the world's most perfect couple.
Yes. And I was horrified, and I made some sort of noise. And I wanted to say something, but it was dripping off the back of his jacket. And I couldn't speak. So I turned in order to apologize to the girlfriend or be yelled at by her, but she was looking off in a different way. And in fact, no one seemed to be looking until I sat down and I looked around aghast. And there was this one man who was sitting in the corner that did seem to have noticed but didn't want to be noticing. And he had a look of relish, as if it was a nice slapstick moment.
Relish. So here you are experiencing the way you started the story.
Shame. I did not have relish. He had relish. The viewer had relish. Yes.
And was this Schadenfreude? Was he relishing your humiliation?
Probably.
Or something a little larger than that?
He could have been the whole thing. I'm going to say the whole thing. He could have been, I guess there is the perfect look that has been destroyed, or also just the whole scene.
So, Jackie, where does this fit into the Subway Chronicle scheme of things?
Well, it's, I think it's one of our, well, the whole collection of vignettes that, that Amy has comprised is sort of spans the realm of all of our experiences on the subway. And in fact, we have stories of relish and shame and love and just running the gamut. And that's what the stories are about, really. It's about the people that ride. And I think, you know, hopefully some of our callers today will, you know, exemplify that.
Let's find out. Jason in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jace.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
All right.
What you got?
So I was on the N train coming up out of the city, coming back into Astoria, and it was about rush hour, and we got to Queensboro Plaza, and our train was kind of full, but when the 7 transferred over, a bunch of other people got on, so it was getting more packed. And this guy got on, he was kind of short, about 5'4" or something, but he was a construction worker or something. He'd just gotten off, and he had these dusty work clothes on, and he was clearly lit. I mean, he had a, you know, 40-ouncer in his hand, paper bag and everything. So at 5 o'clock, and he's standing there by this pole, and this woman was standing there, and, you know, she's reading, minding her own business. She's kind of young, and I was sitting down, and all the seats were, you know, taken, and he starts, you know, kind of grumbling at her and coming on to her and basically incoherent, and she's getting increasingly uncomfortable. And I thought that what your one guest said was really interesting about how he, you know, it's kind of like the subway's this moral ambivalent, like you don't know when to interact or when to jump in or something, and you can see this girl is getting uncomfortable, and suddenly this one woman just like pushed her way through the crowd, and she went up to the woman who's, you know, being assaulted or whatever, and mm-hmm. she says, you know, "Hey, Jenny, how are you? Oh, I haven't seen you in forever." And the woman looked at her like, oh, now, you know, like she'd just gotten on the subway from hell. I mean, all these people coming at her. But it turns out this woman was a total stranger and just knew well enough to, like, come out of the blue and, like, grab this woman by the arm and pretend that they knew each other and just pulled her off down the car and got her away from the drunk construction worker sexual harasser. So that was my story.
Is there a moral to the story?
Are you asking me if there's a moral to the story?
Yes, sir.
Quick thinking, well, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Well, and also, just that as a guy, I just didn't really feel like, you know, I mean, I could have gotten up and, you know, said something to the woman, but I felt like, you know, is she going to think that, like, you know, every guy's coming out of the woodwork now? I mean, it's mm-hmm. that sort of same thing about, you know, race or gender, where you just don't know when to cross the line. So,
Jason, thanks for the story. And we'll get to more of your calls. Jason's line is now free. Remember, these are to be your one-minute stories of things seen or experienced on the subways, so we can keep them brief and concise and get enough other folks on. Jason did a good job there. And Jackie Kangro, what do you look for in deciding what to include either in the book or on your website, subwaychronicles.com? Is it enough for something just to be amusing and well-written?
Well, that's certainly part of it. But also, you know, now that we've had the website for 4 years and the book said, I'm looking for something a little different, you know, something that hasn't been shared with us before, because I am sure that there are endless stories out there. So they're just looking for something a little unusual.
Margaret in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Margaret.
Margaret,
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I thought my screener just left out the R, but it really is Margaret.
It's Swedish. It's an odd name.
Good. So what happened to you?
I was on the N train and detected motion, I knew was not good motion, and looked over and saw a man exposing himself, and I usually carry pepper spray, and I didn't have it, but I had a 4-ounce tube of hand cream, which I unscrewed slowly and stood up and said an expletive and sprayed
You said an expletive? Go ahead.
Sprayed him from head to toe with this white, thick hand cream, which he then had in his hair and all over, and nobody on the everybody was just, of course, shocked, and nobody did anything.
What could they have done?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but it was just very odd. I was very emotional. I still get upset talking about it, as you can hear, and I was sort of breathing because I was so upset, and he was just sitting there getting hand cream out of his hair, and I got off at the next stop. Well, and I read in the Times, I guess a year ago or so, that it happens to women a lot.
Yeah. Do you feel like people were cheering you on for what you were doing?
No. It was. I think it was just so stunning and odd. I didn't get a sense of, oh, you know, good, he got gross stuff all over him. No.
Or nobody stepped up to add moisturizer or anything like that.
No.
Margaret, thank you for the call.
And Francine Prose's story is similar in the book, a breakup story about her experience actually being groped in the subway station. So I think it happens to women more often than...
Well, here's in a way, the opposite story. This is sent via email, and Amy from... Someone you know apparently asked me after the show, and I'll tell you who. But it says, this happened several years ago on the Uptown No. 1 train above 116th Street. I noticed that a young woman seated across from me was reading Lady Sings the Blues, the biography of Billie Holiday. At the next stop, a man who appeared homeless got on, I supposed, to panhandle. He stood there for a minute and apparently also noticed the young woman's book. Suddenly, he began to speak. And after a few seconds, I realized that he was reciting the first pages of Lady Sings the Blues. So there's expectations, negative expectations, yes, dashed on the subway.
Yes.
Laura in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
What you got?
I was riding on a half-full A train very early one morning, and a 300-pound homeless-looking man comes on through the end door, and he's singing a show tune. You know, something like That's Entertainment. It was very catchy, and he's wearing a full-length pink evening dress with feathers and rhinestones. And he's really, really good. But the funny thing is that nobody on the train looks up. Everyone else keeps looking down at their shoes, except for this guy across from me who's wearing a nice suit. And as the homeless singer moves down the car, the guy in the suit hops up on the seat, starts singing along, grabs the homeless guy by the shoulders, and the two of them proceed down the car, high-kicking, in time together, singing. They move on to the next car, and everyone in the car that I'm riding in continues to look at their feet as if nothing has happened.
That's what you got to love in New York. You never know when a dance routine is going to break out. Thank you very much, Laura. Now, it's interesting to me, Jackie, that a number of people are calling, and we're not choosing them for this. It's just working out that almost everyone we're going to has a story of something involving somebody who is apparently homeless. And then the other big theme is people pretending like nothing happened.
Well, that is a huge theme. As you said, it is New York. So I think that's the MO when you ride the subway, especially.
And I wonder, you know, thinking back to your story, Amy, if you were in almost any other place in the world, would that guy have felt he had to say something to you once he realized that he knew that you knew and he knew what had happened?
I would have hoped that he would have said something or at least made an expression towards me. He didn't. I would think that anywhere that wasn't as big a city as New York.
With me for a few more minutes, Amy Holman, contributor, and Jacqueline Kangro, the editor of the Subway Chronicles, Scenes from Life in New York. And we're taking your one-minute subway stories. Our lines are still full at 212-433-WNYC. Just a quick reminder that we are in our fall membership drive, so if you feel so moved to support WNYC, we sure hope you will at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or you can pledge quick and easy online at WNYC.org. Thanks a lot, everybody. And George in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, George.
Hi, Brian.
What you got?
Well, it was about 2 years ago on the L train. I was traveling between First Avenue and Bedford stop, and so that's, you know, a good while underneath the river.
Mm-hmm.
And right as the doors were closing, a rat jumps into our car. And so,
and starts reciting Lady Sings the Blues.
I've never seen anything like this ever before. But, you know, I just moved to the city and was kind of grumpy about having to shell out money and, you know, was down and out. And so this rat really turned things around for me. I saw people screaming, jumping up on their seats, just going crazy. And this really calm man next to the door to the next car slowly opened the car up and let the rat out, and everyone went on with their lives.
Thank you, George. Patty in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you?
All right, how are you? What you got?
I was on the 2 or 3, the West Side Subway, coming down back to Brooklyn from about 96th Street one Sunday afternoon, and I was reading John McPhee's book, The Pine Barrens, rather obscure book. And we got to, I don't know, 14th Street, and I look up, and there's a young college student standing in front of me, and he's reading The Pine Barrens by John McPhee. And
he starts reciting Ladies' Sing.
We looked at each other, and I said, gosh, I just can't believe this is happening. Most people on Earth haven't even heard of this book. And it turns out he was a biology student at Columbia, and he had an assignment to read the book because they were going on a field trip.
Right. Well, it's not that. He's a New Yorker writer. It's about part of the metro area environment, right? It's the
New Jersey.
Pine Barrens, right?
Yeah. But he invited me to join the class trip and go to the Pine Barrens.
Did you?
No, I couldn't. But it was just one of those experiences that, and at the time I was working at the New Yorker, I had fact-checked some of McPhee's stuff, but it was just amusing.
Free copy, huh?
Yeah, right.
Patty, thanks a lot. So, Amy, you're going to wrap this up with another cup story, right?
Am I? Yes. Well, how about the prefab urinal? I was on the train with a friend of mine, and she was at the time, her name is Susie, and she was at the time a photo editor at the Providence Journal, and she always had her camera with her, and I had mine, and we were on the subway going downtown, and it was probably the 6th train. And we were opposite us, there was this woman with her two little sons. One was just stunned, quiet with exhaustion, and the other one was doing what we all recognize all over the world. He was arching his back and cupping his crotch, and he needed to go to the bathroom, and he kept saying to his mother that he did, and she tried to calm him down because they were on the subway, of course. And after a little bit, she must have realized that, well, if he keeps doing this, it's going to be a problem. He was about 6. So she also realized that in amongst the bags on the floor that she had the solution to the problem. And this is the New York way of life. There are the kinds of ways in the wilderness that you can survive. This is the New York City subway survival of a young mother.
There were no trees there for
the
boys.
No trees. There was no woods. So she took out one of those tall cups that you have soda in, and she took it out and she dumped the remaining slivers of ice in the white bag, and she took off the lid and the straw, and she orchestrated it just right so that if anyone was anywhere in the subway, they couldn't see him from any angle. And he peed in the cup. And she put the lid back on, and he was relieved. He zipped back up and sat down, and she just held the cup in her lap.
Do you
carefully.
Think you were the only other person who knew what was going on?
My friend Susie and I were directly across. So the two of us, we were. She had said, I don't know. Yeah, it could have been that thing that the remaining people in the car were reading, as they do.
And you being photographers were toting cameras.
Well, my friend Susie had said to me that before many times that you can't be shy. You can't worry about whether anyone wants you to take a picture
of
them.
If you find that moment.
You have that moment. You have to take it.
Did
and
she?
Yet, there are no photographs.
So now you were the person giving civic space and pretending you didn't see.
Yes.
Amy Holman, a contributor to the Subway Chronicles, Scenes from Life in New York, published by Plume, and Jacqueline Kangro, the editor. Give the website again if people want to read or contribute.
It's thesubwaychronicles.com.
Thanks. This has been so much fun.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for coming in. Thanks for listening to The Brian Lehrer Show from WNYC New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.